is Friday, November 6th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the vote counting continues as Joe Biden urges patience and President Trump claims fraud. International observers say they see no evidence so far of fraud or wrongdoing in the U.S. election.
We really need to see that every vote is counted, because that is the international agreement and commitment to which the United States is also party.
Also ahead, Pope Francis urges the faithful to take precautions in the pandemic. It's all on today's International Edition. As the election voting continues, President Donald Trump made his first public appearance Thursday night since the early morning hours after Election Day. Trump last appeared in public early Wednesday when he falsely declared victory over Democrat Joe Biden in the presidential race. Both candidates made brief appearances Thursday. Joining us for an update is VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. Steve, what can you tell us?
The president had said he was going to hold a news conference, then came out and spent 16 minutes at the lectern in the White House press briefing room, claiming that his leads in swing states were, quote, whittled away in secret. This, as the vote counting continues, he did not produce any evidence to back up his claim that he's being cheated out of a second term. What he did say is, if you count the legal votes, I easily win. And then said, if you count the illegal votes, they can try to steal the election from us. Now, no one has come out and pointed to any illegal votes. There have been no charges of voter fraud in this election, and every state official tasked with counting the votes across the country, and especially in the swing states on which his re-election will hang, have not reported any instances of malfeasance with the balloting or the counting.
And former Vice President Joe Biden spoke earlier in the day on Thursday. What did he have to say?
Former Vice President Joe Biden did speak briefly for a couple of minutes before the president spoke, but after the president had sent out a series of tweets, including one that said any votes that came in after the November 3rd election will not be counted. And Biden said every ballot must be counted. He made brief remarks on camera in Wilmington, Delaware. And he said, and that's what we're going to see going through now. That's how it should be. Democracy is sometimes messy. It sometimes requires a little patience as well. For the president, he is saying that he will take his case all the way to the Supreme Court to prevent what he claims an election being stolen from him. He also talked about what he called phony polls before the election that he asserted were designed to keep his supporters at home. The polls were off a bit. They were much more optimistic based on the interviews with the voters about how the vice president, former Vice President Biden, would perform. But there's absolutely no evidence that there was any deliberate tampering with any of the major polls in the country. Now, some of the stuff that the president had tweeted on Thursday, some of these tweets were slapped with a warning by Twitter saying that some or all of the content shared in this tweet is disputed and might be misleading about an election or other civic process. So on social media and the president's direct comments as well to the cameras, a lot of people are taking dispute with them.
Did it seem like he was preparing to take some sort of action, or was he maybe just blowing off steam and still waiting, like all of us, to see how these results come in?
Well, the campaign has already been stating that it is or will be taking action. It's filed lawsuits in a number of states, making various assertions about the voting or counting process. As of yet, no judge since the elections made a preliminary ruling favorable to the Trump campaign in any of the actions, and several were quickly dismissed in Georgia, Michigan, and Minnesota.
VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. The head of an international delegation monitoring the U.S. elections said Thursday his team has no evidence to support President Donald Trump's claims about alleged fraud involving mail-in absentee ballots. German lawmaker Michael Link, who heads an observer mission by the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, told the Associated Press before Trump's Thursday night speech that his observer team found no systemic wrongdoing or fraud at polling stations.
Of course, we looked also in the mail-in ballot process, in the absentee ballot process. Of course, it's a detailed process. We all know that there are some differences, but independent of differing voting systems and differing electoral systems in different states, we try to get the picture on ground to see what's happening. And when checking that, when observing, we could not find any hints of systemic wrongdoing or fraud or manipulation. Of course, technical mistakes happened here and there. There were shortcomings, but more of a technical nature, which had no systemic or organized character.
The Vienna-based OSCE, of which the United States is a member, conducts observer missions at major elections in all of its member states. Link said they had also looked into President Trump's allegations of voter fraud.
Already in the campaign, but of course also in election night, we repeatedly heard the president speaking of a corrupt system or a fraud system or a broken system. This is indeed a very severe allegation. And when it comes from one of the contenders, of course, we have to take it serious. So we looked into it, of course. We looked, as did the national poll observers. To this very day, no proof, no really concrete material could be found, what could be seen as a base for these allegations. So it was indeed irritating to hear that again and again, including on election night.
Link spoke in the Pennsylvania state capital of Philadelphia and said he and members of his monitoring team were observing opposing protests outside a convention center where votes were being counted. The German lawmaker said they're hoping to speak with election officials in Philadelphia and said authorities had been cooperating with them so far.
But what we indeed would like to see, and that is important for the international standards of observation, we really need to see that every vote is counted, because that is the international agreement and commitments to which the United States is also party in the OSCE, the organization which I'm representing. It is very important, of course, that democratic elections are led to the very end and that the results are duly published and all complaints duly followed.
A preliminary report on the U.S. elections by the OSCE observer team said the elections were competitive and well managed. The report also noted that voter registration and identification rules in some states were unduly restrictive for certain groups of citizens. The balance of power in the U.S. Congress will come down to just a few close races across the nation where votes are still being counted. As VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports, the race to control the U.S. Senate will actually stretch into next year.
Control of the United States Senate could be decided here in Georgia as volunteers count ballots with a margin between Republican Senator David Perdue and Democratic challenger John Ossoff is incredibly close. Democratic Senate candidate John Ossoff.
It's not just that you're a crook, Senator.
Republicans went into Election Day with a 53-47 majority in the U.S. Senate. To win control, Democrats need to gain 3 seats if Joe Biden becomes president and 4 seats if Donald Trump is reelected. John Aldrich, Duke University.
If Biden is elected, he is known as someone who has worked across the aisle throughout his career. And if the Democrats have a narrower base in the House, they are going to be looking for allies. So there is some chance under a Democratic administration with divided control that there would be some sort of bipartisanship.
Election day success for Democrats in Arizona, where Mark Kelly beat Republican Martha McSally, and in Colorado, where former Governor John Hinkenlooper won his Senate race. But Republicans picked up a Senate seat in Alabama and held on to seats in several close races, including contests in Iowa, Maine, and South Carolina, where President Trump's close ally, Senator Lindsey Graham, beat a well-funded Democratic challenge. Whether it's Trump or Biden occupying the White House, control of the U.S. Senate will determine what work gets done in Washington for the next 2 years. Democrats had also hoped to add to their majority in the U.S. House of Representatives. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
But I'm here just to sing the praises of our House Democrats and our candidates.
But House Democrats did not make as many gains as projected. Still, they will keep their majority. Michelle Swerz, Georgetown University.
It really hinges on who wins the presidential race, some of this, because President Trump and Nancy Pelosi haven't even seen each other really for a year. There's a lot of bad blood between the two of them. So I think it would be very difficult for President Trump to get a new legislative platform through the Congress.
The final makeup of the U.S. Senate will not be known until January. That's when the other Georgia Senate race between Republican Kelly Loeffler and Democratic challenger Raphael Warnock goes into a runoff election. Katherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Sounds like y'all ready for victory.
Yeah! As Americans watch the U.S. presidential race, so too does the rest of the world. In Africa's most mature democracy, South Africa, pundits and partisans alike are glued to the news because they say, whether you live in Chicago or Cape Town, this matters. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
It was nearly 1 a.m. in Wilmington, Delaware, when journalist Stephen Frutis interrupted his live radio show with some breaking news. Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden was speaking to the nation after a long, tense election day.
Good afternoon to you, as I say, a special edition of Newsfeed this afternoon because of the U.S. presidential elections. Expecting that press.
Here's why this is unusual. Frutis hosts radio and TV shows on the other side of the planet, in South Africa. But even here, the U.S. election is inescapable. Election news dominates front pages from Nigeria to Kenya to South Africa, with detailed coverage of developments from strange-sounding foreign lands like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Arizona. This election, Frutis explained, is the world's business.
Myself and so many other people in South Africa are really, in a way, obsessed with the American elections. We kind of are anyway, because it's, you know, the oldest democracy in the world. People used to look up to America. In this case, because of the sort of Trump effect, because of the consequence of it, partly because of what Trump has said about our continent, which is not very nice, I found myself just obsessed by it, checking American news websites, you know, sort of almost living a slightly different life.
The U.S. consulate estimates that as many as 30,000 Americans live in the country. About 780 are registered members of Democrats Abroad, including Florida voter Anita Vorlicek. There's no known South African chapter of their counterpart, Republicans Overseas. In fact, the organization has no presence at all in sub-Saharan Africa. Vorlicek, a 27-year-old graduate student, voted in Charlotte County, where Trump won easily, and says she's been following the results nervously. She was already awake when Trump declared himself the winner in the early hours of Wednesday morning, and she was not amused.
So I think he's trying to instill doubt in people. He's trying to instill fear in people, and that's dangerous. And that's, I think, no matter who gets elected, the biggest challenge that's going to be moving forward is trying to unite and bring all Americans together, because as we can see in those results, we are very divided.
South African political analyst Ralph Matega has also been rising early and going to bed late, so he can watch the election results unfold across the seven-hour time difference.
Yeah, well, American election has got implications on Africa and on global stability. I mean, during Trump's regime, things got bad. Global relations were at their worst. So it also affects trade as well. As African countries, we should be concerned. I mean, we have trade relations with the USA. So American elections have got a very, very deep implication.
Frutis says he wasn't surprised by much of the events, including the Trump campaign's move to file lawsuits in the battleground states of Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Georgia. But he said he was a little taken aback by just how close the results have been.
I think a lot of South Africans thought that this would be, in a way, a Democratic correction, that Trump would be sort of trounced from the White House, that the Republicans would sort of be thrown out of the Senate. And that hasn't happened, and I think that's really surprised a lot of South Africans. I think frustrated them to an extent as well.
Frustration, impatience, disappointment, hope, and some fear and anger. In many ways, as the U.S. democratic process continues, it is increasingly clear Africa and the U.S. aren't so far apart after all. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to International Edition. We'll be right back.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast comes to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
They're still trying to figure out what are the specific policies from the White House.
VOA Asia, your daily digest of top Asia stories.
Beijing has especially hazardous levels of air pollution.
Blending American and Asian perspectives.
China is protecting wildlife.
Original reports and series, education, health, technology. Stories that mean something to your daily life. VOA Asia.
VOA's International Edition continues. Pope Francis is urging people in Italy to follow the latest strict measures imposed by authorities to stop the spread of the coronavirus. More now from VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo.
Pope Francis has halted his weekly audience with hundreds of people and returned behind closed doors to communicate with the faithful through television. And with the surge of coronavirus cases in Italy, he had this message.
Purtroppo siamo dovuti tornare.
Unfortunately, we had to return to this audience in the library to defend ourselves from the COVID contagion. This also teaches us that we have to be very careful about the requests made by the authorities, both political authorities and health authorities, to protect ourselves from this pandemic.
His appeal came as the Italian government announced Monday it will impose stricter measures to control the virus. These include closing museums and exhibitions, introducing a nighttime curfew, and curbing travel from the worst-hit regions.
Chiuderanno, ahimè, anche musei e mostre.
We are working at limiting to 50% the capacity of all local public transport. And finally, we are looking at introducing limits to the movement of people to and from regions with a high risk level, except in cases of people traveling for proven work purposes or health and education reasons.
Almost 40,000 people have died in Italy from COVID-19, the second highest death toll in Europe after Britain, where, beginning Thursday, all non-essential shops, pubs, and restaurants will close for 4 weeks, but they will be allowed to serve takeaway food. In a pre-recorded video address to a British business conference, Prime Minister Boris Johnson promised on Wednesday to do whatever it takes to curb the reproduction of the virus.
We want to get the R down, get the epidemic halving again, to get this country moving again, and get this economy motoring. And as we do that, we will be with you, with British business, as we have been throughout.
In Germany, Chancellor Angela Merkel says the month-long partial lockdown that started there this week was necessary to protect the country's health system. The shutdown covers restaurants, bars, theaters, and other leisure facilities.
Und ob diese große gemeinsame Kraftanstrengung.
And whether this massive combined effort gets results in November will not be because of the regulations per se, but whether they are followed.
Merkel warned that the number of people with the virus in intensive care units has doubled in the last 10 days. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
In Kenya, the first group of volunteers is undergoing clinical trials of a vaccine developed in Britain for COVID-19. It's part of a global effort to test the vaccine developed by the University of Oxford and the pharmaceutical company AstraZeneca, as we hear from Lenny Ruvaga in Nairobi.
About 40 volunteers, mostly frontline health workers, are participating in the COVID-19 vaccine clinical trials in Kenya. The trial phase of the vaccine, developed by the University of Oxford in partnership with a pharmaceutical company AstraZeneca, is being conducted by the KEMRI Wellcome Trust Research Program based in Kilifi. One of the researchers at KEMRI, Dr. Samuel Sang, says they are trying to determine if the vaccine, known as Chadox and COVID-19, is safe for Kenyans.
Vaccines that have been found to work
and are safe in one population does not necessarily mean it will work across populations. Therefore, the need for assessment whether the ChAdOx1 and COVID-19 vaccine is safe and works among Kenyan volunteers to ensure that Kenyans can benefit from the vaccine, that is, if it proves to be successful.
Dr. Sang says the vaccine is being tested for both safety and impact.
Our expectation is to assess whether ChAdOx1 and COVID-19 vaccine is safe, effective, and elicits a good immune response in adults who are above the age of 18 years.
According to the World Health Organization, there are about 100 COVID-19 vaccines currently under the human trial phase of development. But some analysts say that while vaccine research and development are advancing, the equitable distribution of a COVID-19 vaccine remains a question. A recent study by the Duke Global Health Innovation Center argues that high-income countries will have an undue advantage in accessing the vaccines once developed. Andrea Taylor is the Assistant Director for Programs at the Duke Global Health Innovation Center.
Our results need to be understood in the context of limited manufacturing capacity. High- and middle-income countries have already reserved 3.8 billion doses with options for another 5 billion before any vaccines are even on the market. So when vaccine candidates do receive approval, the doses that can be manufactured in the first year or two may already be reserved for high-income countries.
But Taylor says that outcome is not set in stone.
Leadership from lower-income countries is changing the conversation. For example, the African Union and the Africa CDC are coordinating an Africa-wide approach to pool financing for vaccine procurement and to increase manufacturing within Africa. We're seeing similar initiatives emerge in Latin America as well. These regional partnerships are really exciting and could strengthen lower-income countries' leverage and their position on the global market.
Kenya's health ministry says an additional 360 volunteers will be added to the human trial phase once the efficacy and safety of the vaccine has been established over the next 12 months in the first batch of volunteers. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi, Kenya.
The world's biggest iceberg is on course to collide with the island of South Georgia, a key haven for wildlife in the South Atlantic. As Henry Ridgewell reports, scientists say it could have a grave impact on the ecology and economy of the island.
The giant iceberg split off the Antarctic ice shelf in 2017. Named by scientists as A68A, it has since drifted towards South Georgia, a remote British island in the South Atlantic. Satellite images show it is still largely intact, some 150 kilometres long and 48 kilometres wide. It's on course to hit South Georgia in around 30 days. Its shallow depth means it could drift very close to the island. This video from the organisation Penguins International shows the island's huge penguin colonies. Key feeding grounds for penguins and seals could be blocked off, says scientist Geraint Tarling of the British Antarctic Survey.
That means they have to go a lot further, either go around the iceberg or to actually go further to find sources of food. And that time is quite critical at this particular period of their life cycle. They have to get back to their chicks and pups in short amounts of time so that they don't starve in the interim.
The iceberg could stick around for a decade and change the entire ecosystem.
These are globally significant populations of these species. If these species fail in this particular area, then the numbers globally are going to go down quite dramatically.
Iceberg calving in Antarctica is a natural process, but it's changing with global warming, says Tarling.
The rate at which this is happening is increasing, and so this might become more of a usual thing into the future.
The iceberg could also damage South Georgia's valuable fishing industry. The hope is that changing weather patterns could yet divert it into the open ocean. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
This is Science in a Minute.
Back in 1915, Albert Einstein issued his now famous General Theory of Relativity. In his theory, Einstein predicted the existence of gravitational waves, known to many in the science community as ripples in the fabric of space-time. On September 14, 2015, just 2 months before the 100th anniversary of the theory, Einstein's prediction came true when the LIGO collaboration detected the very first gravitational waves. Now, 5 years later, the LIGO and now the European Virgo collaborations say they have detected 39 new gravitational wave signals from the April 1st to October 1st, 2019 segment of their third observational run. The scientific collaborations say these signals were generated by black hole or neutron star collisions in the distant universe. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The olive harvest season in the West Bank is usually a time of celebration, but Palestinians say extremist Jewish settlers routinely destroy trees and even attack farmers. Linda Gradstein reports from the village of Burin near Nablus on a group of dovish Israelis who say they're determined to stop these attacks.
Like thousands of Palestinian farmers during this season, Mohammed Assos worked harvesting his olive trees in the village of Burin near the Jewish settlement Yitzhar. From high up in the tree, he saw Jewish settlers approaching him. He wanted to run away, but instead fell out of the trees onto his back.
After I fell, he threw a large stone on my back very hard. He thought he killed me. I heard him tell his friends, "Go, he's dead." After about 15 minutes, I called my brothers and they called an ambulance. I was in the hospital for a week and I still have a lot of problems in my back.
He shows videos of similar events in the past, including violence against him by Israeli soldiers. He says he didn't report the recent attack because he doesn't believe the soldiers will help him. Assos's friend, Gil Hammerschlag, is a Jewish Israeli who lives in a nearby settlement and comes almost every day to help Palestinians during the month-long harvest. He says Israeli soldiers rarely intervene to stop settler attacks.
I wanted to meet Palestinians to work with on an equal level. They need the hands because they have only a few days a year to finish their grove, or they need help because they fear to go to these groves.
Other leftist Israelis express their solidarity with the Palestinians by helping with the harvest, including the group Rabbis for Human Rights. They work together with Wafika Najjar, a mother of six, who says her family is denied access to some of their 100 olive trees because they are too close to the three Jewish settlements which surround Burin. Her complaint is shared by the village's other 3,500 residents who own about 10,000 olive trees.
This is my land and my homeland. It makes us very angry when the settlers try to take it away. The olive harvest is really important for us, not only economically, but also socially. And a lot of people are afraid to let their children come because they are afraid of settler attacks. It really breaks my heart.
Yisrael Meidad, a spokesman for the Israeli settlers, says they reject all violent attacks on any side of the conflict, and they think Palestinian claims are exaggerated.
Dozens of times, the number of 300 trees are cut down, exactly 300, again and again and again. So many of us have doubts, unless there's very good proof brought about what's going on. The majority of the cases are on Shabbat, when most of the boys who are religious wouldn't do this.
Rabbi Ehud Bandel, one of the founders of Rabbis for Human Rights, offers a different point of view.
Judaism, in a nutshell, is what is hateful to you, do not do unto others. And when we come here to show our solidarity with these others, okay, for us, that is indeed the manifestation of our Judaism. It's important for Palestinians, and we have here their kids, to see Jews coming with an open hand, stretched hand for peace, and not with uniform and guns.
Most Israelis and Palestinians live in a divided reality, but working together, picking olives, they get to know each other and maybe even become friends. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Burin in the West Bank.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Vunganyi, I'm Lori London in Washington. Thank you for listening and have a great weekend.